Hey, Bill and Gutham, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the country today and on the Yidinji country that is, and around the world via the World Wide Web. I hope you're doing well, and we just thank you for joining the program as usual. And we've got lots to say today. We've got a full packed studio here with Bumi, Minister for Police, Minister for Education, Yirrkala, and the Attorney General, Ganyara. It's a wonderful week, and we've got a bit of news, but I thought we'd start with the police minister today has got something very special in his hands. He's got the Yidinji police badges and a few other things like that. Minister, a very, very happy moment for the Yidinji police.
Yeah, good morning. I've got a badge here, Yidinji police badge. It's a new one, and I've also got a vest with Yidinji name on it too, the police. So it'll be good for me to go down Harvey Creek, or there's Creek there because holiday time now. We need somebody on that bridge there to protect our own people. And I go along Gimo here to talk to Hamob about messing the beach up or correct them in the right way. And, so I'm going to have a good talk to them again because all they'll be going on the beach. But I'm glad we got this badge, yeah, and this vest that we can let our light shine too.
Yes, when you look at the police badge, it's got a number of things on there. It's got the shield, the murumbul, the crown. It's got the wairawal there, and it's got the scorpion shield, that is. And, it looks very nice and official, and that's what the police will be carrying with them.
Yeah, well, Dad took the front line a long time ago, Boa, and he made that shield. But the murumbul and what murumbul just said now, and that, I forgot the language now.
That's all right. I think that's really important that the scorpion shield has got... is displayed on there, and remember, this was the when we did this, we told the world about what Yidinji were doing, and already, already it's taking off, and I think the Yidinji police is the fastest growing part of the government, and I think you've got about 15 officers now, eh?
Yeah, 15 or 20 now. So making them game to stand up now to talk to people and, and that's very good for me and good for the Yidinji tribe too. And so we're going ahead now and that's good. I'm proud of myself and I'm proud of and all these lot who are coming with us too to stand up. Now it's time to stand up instead of backing down now because we are the traditional owner of this land and we need to see a lot of things come true good, you know.
Yeah, we've seen some police behaving in a way that's a bit rough in that, and I think we'll have a listen to that later. But, Carla, under your direction, the Yidinji police aren't here to hit people or to make them feel in a wrong way, bad or hurt them, you know what I mean?
No, we're not going to hurt them or anything. We're just going to go talk to them. And that's a traditional owner, like how a lot now come from far and wide. They understand about protocol, you know, about how custom way, where sacred sites and how to behave yourself, you know. They all know that, so that's what we be talking to them about, you know. You can't smash bottle or drinking along the beach, you know, and they really got to talk about them to look at yourself, you know, that you got somebody in Cairns, you know. We're not legal aid or anything. We're not going to take you to court. We want to talk to you, you know, about our land.
Yeah, I think it's a really important thing. It is lawful, and I think the important thing is to make sure that the peace is being kept on the territory. And also... you know, it goes to the Australian too. The Australian will have to obey the Yidinji police as well. Whether you're a QPS officer or work for the Australian Federal Police, there is a law that is currently resides on this territory, that's been here since day dot. It's pre-1770. The Australian courts recognise and uphold that, and the rule of law must be upheld. So I think we've made that very clear in previous programs. But before we go there, we're going to go and have a listen to this Sky News report that was on air recently. And there's an article there on their website about Victorian police. Now, I know we've talked about a lot of police behaviour, especially in the Northern Territory over the last few weeks, but this one is now where there appears to be a massive lack of trust in the Victorian police force. And so let's have a listen to this news report.
Now to matters closer to home, and Victoria Police Command wants you to forget about what they've been up to for the past couple of years. You know, harassing old women on park benches, arresting pregnant women in their kitchens for Facebook posts, enforcing playground bans on children, and their brutal response to anti-lockdown protests. Yes, please, forget all that. And remember, they are on our side. After 2 years of overreach and selective policing, the VicPol hierarchy want to rebuild their brand.
Police are promising more of this and this in a brand rebuilding exercise.
We're approachable, we're involved, we're working with them, and we're here to help.
They're also hoping to repair a brand damaged by 2 years of unpopular COVID policing.
We know we've had to perform duties and engage with people, and it might not have been what they would have expected in the first instance because of the COVID environment we're in.
No, Commissioner, you didn't have to do any of the insanely illiberal and often downright brutal enforcement that you and your members of your command enthusiastically embrace. You didn't have to allow the police force to become politicised. You didn't have to stand with bureaucrats banning children from playgrounds. You know, want to build trust with the Victorian public? I can't imagine why.
Excuse me, what on earth?
Yeah, just put your phone down.
Can you, like, record this? I'm in my pyjamas.
What's
I
this?
I've had an ultrasound in an hour. Because
yeah, she's pregnant.
We have seen Victoria Police behave abhorrently. We had officers in full riot gear even terrorising fruit and vegetable shoppers at Victoria Market. Again, the heavy-handed response to an anti-lockdown protest was in stark contrast to the force's attitude to a mass BLM march during lockdown. For BLM, there was restraint, no mass arrests or fines. But for those questioning why their kids' schools were closed and their livelihoods were being destroyed, they cop this. There is so much more I could show you, but this is only a two-hour show. But I do want to highlight a couple of incidents that show just why so many law-abiding Victorians are normally pro-police now look at the force with suspicion. Now, this next incident didn't get any attention despite the brutality and clear misuse of a weapon. This is from an anti-lockdown protest in September last year. Note the officer in the back using his weapon to beat the man on the ground. No consequences, no repercussions for that. And then there was this brutality on the same day that police in full riot gear descended on the fruit and vegetable aisles of Victoria Market. Another police team in Epping were caught on camera stomping on the head of a man suffering a mental health episode. Now, that poor victim ended up in an induced coma. And the incident was investigated, but guess what? You'll be happy to learn that the watchdog found that Victoria Police acted lawfully when head-stomping a mentally ill man during arrest. Yes, put that together with the Sluggate saga, the intimidation of Dan Andrews' critics, the politicisation of the police force and selective policing practices, the Lawyer X scandal that completely undermined the criminal justice system and the failure to properly swear in more than 1,000 officers, then you can see why there may be a crisis in trust in law enforcement in Victoria. And a little cheap PR isn't going to fix that. Police Command needs a clean out, starting with Assistant Commissioner Luke Cornelius, who referred to anti-lockdown protesters as batshit crazy conspiracy theorists, but this was his attitude to BLM protesters during the pandemic.
Victoria Police understands and acknowledges the anger and frustration people feel about events taking place overseas and which are dominating our TV. We absolutely understand the sentiment and the anger that lies behind that, and we're very keen to support community here in giving voice to their concerns and their protests.
Yes, you can understand BLM protesters, but no consideration for people whose very livelihoods were being destroyed. Yes, Victoria Police's public image is badly damaged, and as long as the likes of Chief Wiggum over there are in key positions, that ain't going to change.
Gagnaro, that's a very interesting article. Obviously, the Victorian Police Commissioner is trying to make sure that these things don't happen, but at the end of the day, under that system of law, the police have every right and they have protection of office to carry out their duties. It's very rare that a police officer will actually get done in court for something like that, because then it may set a precedent of some sort.
Oh, yeah, look, it really is. And that was highlighted just recently with the case over in the Northern Territory, with that officer being getting off scot-free, basically, for shooting that young fellow at Yuendamu. That was in front of an all-white judiciary, the jury itself, all-white. There was no original people there to actually be involved in it. Same down in Victoria. And all I can say is the Victorian people, look, welcome to our world. You know, there was actually a news article out in the Guardian newspaper just the other day about more than half of the massacres carried out in Australia were carried out by the police. Now, you know, I don't ever want to see that happen to anyone, black, white or brindle. You know, Australian, Albanian, we don't rightly care. We don't need to see police going out there causing mayhem and massacre. And in that Sky News interview, it actually showed one policeman out there using the butt of his rifle to bash someone with. Now, that's become a weapon in its own right, like a club or a stick. You know, so that there should be really pursued through the courts. And as the reporter said, there was no mention of it. There was no mention of it in the media. There was no mention of it ever getting to court. There's just nothing. And yet that policeman could use the butt of his gun like a stick or a club to bash someone. That's not right. That's not fair. And as Uncle there said, our way is dialogue first. Let's talk about things. Let's see what's going on. Let's see what the real problem is. You know, Victoria, they had these draconian laws brought in, or these health mandates by people who were not elected. You know, these were just people, you know, that got to a position in power and they just exercised power like no tomorrow, and you couldn't question it. You know, they were beyond question. It was either their way or no way. And if you didn't do as you were told, the police were sent out. And most of them, I tell you now, most of them didn't want to go and do that. But those who did go out were probably the bullies at school, you know, that took your lunch money or whatever, or they might have their lunch money taken off them. And now they're just getting even with society. We'll even the score up. I'm going to be a cop and I'm going to, you know, sort yous all out. And that's the wrong type of people. A policeman should have the highest intelligence of anyone, because he's given the most authority to affect anyone, you know, arrest or like they had done there, bashed and flogged and all this. So that policeman, all police, must have the highest integrity, the highest intelligence, how to exercise this huge authority very carefully.
There's no doubt that people, including officers I'm talking about here, are under the pump. I wouldn't, you know, I'm not a copper because it is a really tough job, and I wouldn't envy anyone of it, right? But at the same time, there's a number of factors here that I could talk about. The executive level or the leadership level of police should be identifying the strain in their offices, or, you know, to try and make sure that the hot air is released, but not onto the people or wherever it is. But that thing needs to take place. Not only that, the government of the day has to identify and not just rely on the police doing the dirty work for them. Because not that I'm saying that what happened in Victoria was right or wrong. All I'm saying is that as a government, it's something that we can learn from, that our police aren't used for blatant things like kicking people in the head or you know what I mean? I think that's a very important thing, a lesson for our government.
Oh, and they're absolutely right. That's what I'm saying, though. The policeman himself, most of them didn't want to do it. I'll say right now, most of them didn't want to be there. But those who did, you know, quite obviously had this mentality, I'll show these people what to do. Now, if that is deemed wrong by most police, you know, they don't want to be there and do it. Well, quite obviously, the hierarchy should be saying, well, why don't you just want to do that? There must be some underlying factor that's wrong. And an intelligent police officer will question, you know, why am I out there to bash these people? And this is what the police, quite obviously, in Victoria don't want, people to question the order. Why have I got to go out and bash these people? Why have I got to go out and hammer them? Why have we got to go and shoot rubber bullets at them or gas or you know, pepper spray? Why have I got to go and do that? They don't want that. They want their officers to be compliant in every way, shape, and form, which is wrong. If an intelligent police officer questions something, quite obviously there might be something else more to it. There might be a problem there. And they shouldn't be out enforcing law, even if the policeman can see that there's a problem. So we've got to be very mindful of what the situation is at the time. But the police officer is there to enforce law. And that's his role and job. And I don't want to be doing that, you know, where there is someone armed with a gun. They've got to make decisions in split seconds, which can be life and death, but not in these protest situations where you see them, you know, throwing people to the ground the way they did that old woman there. You know, it can be all taken out of context, all this stuff, but remember it. When it's captured on film, it's there. And they're trying to get a PR rebrand, I suppose, but it's too late. Once the damage is done, it's too late.
Yes, the trust has collapsed. And Yurla, I might be bringing you in here because I think what's really important is that the police officers that didn't want to do it, for example, that the Ganyara was saying there, it only takes a few rotten eggs to really stigmatise the whole lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the what we've faced for the last few years. Certainly it's been standing out to everybody, the way that media portrays or doesn't portray things. And when you have a few rotten eggs, that's what's going to absolutely be the case. But, you know, on the flip side, I've heard for so many times over the years when things like truth-telling is spoken of and the history of this country in regard to what happened with the first people of this area and all the areas around here. And whenever it's brought up, I always hear someone who we might call them a bad egg, where they tell you to get over it. Well, you know, what are all these people complaining about where they're getting butted in the head? They just get over it, you know? It doesn't seem to be a two-way street. It's just always one way.
Yes, it's a bit like that. But, Colin, even in your family, people are shot here. And that's something that Yurlum was saying, that these fellas complaining about it, but yet when it comes to Yidinji or another mob, they sort of, oh, yeah, but, you know, that was a long time ago.
See, like this now, but I've been a community police, and you know that the law on you, when you take it off, you're empty. But as for Aboriginal rule, Aboriginal law, it stays in you. You're born with it, you know? So when I go around here, they know, they can see that you're a traditional owner, you know? And they still say that to us. They say, well, you should ask him there. So what you lot out there should do, you should come in and come in and have a talk with us. We've got to have somebody in this town because this is our home here. This is the Yidinji land, and you need to come and talk to us so we can sort it out, you know, not growling you that you need help. Because in the help, but I know my dad, Boa, Charlie Ide, he was a very strong man. You know, we all got spokesmen in our tribe. So in Yidinji, we're here. We're waiting for you. Ganjari, Murumu, and Yurum, we're here. Come and visit us, you know? So then you'll know what it's all about. And Yeah,
I think that's really, really important to remind people that this is, you know, as I say, the Yidinji police don't carry weapons. If they do in the future with firearms, it would be a tactical response group or SERT type special or emergency response team that wouldn't be visible on the majority of the police. So these are the things. But, I mean, at the end of the day, a formal agreement with the Commonwealth of Australia would look after that. You know, the QPS or the AFP can do all that kind of stuff. We would just want to make sure that Australian officers don't get into trouble by maybe picking up the wrong person that may be of a jurisdiction that's foreign to theirs. But, you know, that the treaty would sort that out also. We can grant some sort of authority for the Australians to operate on our territory. But like I said, we have our version of the police, and it's like a royal police. In England, at Buckingham Palace, you see the red coats on the back of the horses, or the guys with the big fluffy black caps hats on that don't really talk or smile, the beef eaters and whatever they're called. Those guys are different to the British police. So in this sense, the Yidinji police is the Royal Guard. It would look after the Royal Society and the Yidinji citizen on this territory. And the Australian police and the QPS, through a formal agreement, that is, that's yet to be successfully concluded, by the way, would look after a majority of persons on the territory. And I think that's a win-win, Ganyara.
Oh, it is, but until there's a treaty, it's got to be remembered that the Yidinji police are the ultimate police on the territory. They are the one that has the backing, the law of that sovereignty that coexists with the sovereignty of the Crown. They are the ones that were there first. So everyone else has to be very, very careful. Because there is an old maxim of law, whatever is inside your territory, any person or thing in your territory is subject to your law and authority, which would mean Australian Federal Police, Queensland Police, Prime Minister of Australia, anyone inside Australia is here without consent, so they're actually intruding upon here, they're intruding on our territory, and are then subject to the laws and the authority of the Yidinji Nation and the Yidinji government. That would mean the Yidinji police have the powers, should it be required, to arrest anyone, including Australian Federal Police, Queensland Police, the Prime Minister of Australia. Think about the consequences of that. Australia has not got any way a formal agreement, a marriage to our original sovereignty, the one that coexists, that they wrote in the Uluru Statement from the Heart. They said sovereignties coexist with the Australian Crown.
Yes, and that's very interesting. And if Australia doesn't want to, you know, assist in that, I'm sure that like the Solomon Islands, the Chinese can go in there and help train their officers and stuff like that. Now, you know, I don't speak Chinese. However, the Yidinji Nation would be happy to learn any language that would help create some sort of international relations and develop international relations, whether it be China, New Zealand, Israel, Russia, whatever. But you know what? We can understand the Australian way of life, so let's deal with that. Let's deal with that first. But at the end of the day, you can't force your love onto something, you know? And the Commonwealth of Australia is going to have to either get up to date, you know, or you know, it's in danger of killing itself. Because we're not going to be doing that, because we're trying to help it. It's going to drown out at sea, you know? And that's the truth of the matter. But anyway, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. The awesome foursome. We've got Yirilum, Ganyara, Bumi, and myself, Murumi. We'll be back after the break.
Where life is like, oh, like a river. Only reap what you sow. I hope it's good, and what you give her in return for what you grow. Oh, I'm going down.
Oh, I'm going down.
Down the river today.
To the river today.
I'm jumping in the water. People moving.
Welcome back to the program. Well, we've got some interesting material to play for you again. This is a... we're going to start with the World Government Summit. You may not have heard of it, but it's these people talking about, a world government and how they want to govern the planet. And the first one we'll listen to is Frederick Kemp. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the Atlantic Council, and this is him talking about, pardon me, a world order and the balancing of powers, because considering that China and the US are growing as we speak. Now, Australia being part of AUKUS, but they've just done a deal with China as well in terms of trade, India, So Australia is sort of going to have to pick its friendships quite carefully, but so does Yidinji. Gnyara, I think... first of all, let's have a listen to what Frederick says.
Well, first of all, let's take a look at what makes up world orders. World orders are that a group of countries across the world agree to a set of rules, and they agree to play by them. The second is there's a balance of power so that no power feels that it can subjugate a neighbor. That's what we've lost in Russia. There wasn't a balance of power. Europe decided the age of military power is over. And so Russia is attempting to subjugate Ukraine. But then the third part of this is a consensus that everyone accepts this. It's almost too utopian to come about. And so what's emerging right now, which I think is a danger, is a Chinese-centered order and a U.S.-centered order, and that we're breaking down again. And that's not a healthy outcome. It's not the outcome we want. But that gets to the economics, and that's what I wanted to touch on, because the economics are that China, I think in 2016-17, invested $53 billion in the United States. Last year, $1 billion. So there's already a decoupling. There's already a breaking down. And the question is, how does this play out right now? And so I think you're going to see, in an economic sense, you're going to see these two worlds, but it's not going to be that neat. I think you're going to see the evolution of regional organizations, and the regional, because it's so hard to create a world order, I think you're going to see regional orders spring up. And then you have links between regional orders, but they will be very much guided by economic interests, social interests, and also security interests. You see things like the Quad, like the Abraham Accords, so ad hoc, not inflexible alliances, and that seems to me what's emerging at the moment.
So, Gagnon, what was your take on that?
Oh, there is. And remember one thing in this, there is something building over this, but it's the UN world. Australia already has given up some of its sovereignty when it became a member of the United Nations back in 1946. There's no argument over that. You can't have complete sovereignty over your place and yet be a member or an international citizen in something else where laws and rules, you know, the rule of law dictates. So Australia has already taken part in the one world government. It is there. Now they're just refining it and bringing it about. But remember, Australia ratified or supported the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous Peoples back in 2009, where they said, in Article 5, they supported the article of the Indigenous peoples have a right to revitalise all their stuff, bring it back to life, do whatever they've got to do in their domestic and internal affairs while they have a right, if they so choose, to participate in the life of the state. It makes it very clear there's two things. You know, you have the right to go and build your nation, build your structure, build everything you want, or take part in the UN world through the member state called the Commonwealth of Australia. Now, we've made a choice. We were never part of Australia. We were actually actively excluded from being in Australia right from the very start. They weren't allowed at any of the moments when the original constitution was built. They were kept right out. And then the Franchise Act of 1902 said, you know, the Aboriginal natives can't take part in Australia. Well and good. The best thing you ever done for us was to leave us right out. But that left our sovereignty intact, the one that coexists with the sovereignty of the Crown, which is what we're revitalising. And there is no treaty between us and the Commonwealth of Australia. So we had no choice but to bring back things like our government, our police force, bring it back and strengthen it. Hence the badges that Uncle was showing there earlier on, that the new police badges, they had to come back. But this year, the rest of the world is restructuring itself, the UN world that is, not the Indigenous nations. The Indigenous nations can go and do as they want. But in the UN world, the member states, they are forming alliances. You know, the Russia-Chinese connection. You know, that's building the trouble that's going on in the Ukraine. You know, the Americans actually destroyed NATO when they started to encroach weapons upon the Russian border from the West. So you can't say the Russians are at fault, you know, but that's got nothing to do with us. We're not of the UN world. We're actually left right out of it. The Yidinji nation is modernising itself. It's got no other choice but to do that, you know, such as the digital identity that identifies our citizens from the citizens of Australia, for example. How do we do it? We've got to do it ourselves. The digital currency, the whole box and dice. The rest of the world is going that way, and we've got to be able to interact with that world. As he said, the world is rapidly changing.
It is. And Carl, it's in your short time on the earth, it's been very. There's been a lot of changes here in Ghimoy and around the world as well.
Yeah, there's been a lot of change, all right. That, well, we see things that not running right. We want to see it a lot better yet, you know. Well, that's an elder that I need to see it today, you know, so we can get on with our life. And not only Hidingi people, everybody all in Australia are Aboriginal people, you know. That we want to see our rights for what happened to us, you know. We still wear the hat and we're still going to fight, you know. And we need to see a right fair go, you know.
Yeah, it is all about fair go. And the other thing too was we're going to go back to the World Government Summit. This is Pippa Malgren. She's an economist that is hell-bent on believing that the world financial system is about to switch accounting systems to digital money. A very, very interesting excerpt. Here we go.
What underpins a world order is always the financial system. I was very privileged. My father was an advisor to Nixon when they came off the gold standard in 71, and so I was brought up with a kind of inside view of how very important the financial structure is to absolutely everything else. And what we're seeing in the world today, I think, is we are on the brink of a dramatic change where we are about to, and I'll say this boldly, we're about to abandon the traditional system of money and accounting and introduce a new one. And the new one, the new accounting, is what we call blockchain. It means digital. It means having a almost perfect record of every single transaction that happens in the economy, which will give us far greater clarity over what's going on. It also raises huge dangers in terms of the balance of power between states and citizens. In my opinion, we're going to need a digital constitution of human rights if we're going to have digital money. But also, this new money will be sovereign in nature. Most people think that digital money is crypto and private, but what I see are superpowers introducing digital currency. The Chinese were the first. The U.S. is on the brink, I think, of moving in the same direction. The Europeans have committed to that as well. And the question is, will that new system of digital money and digital accounting accommodate the competing needs of the citizens of all these locations so that every human being has a chance to have a better life? Because that's the only measure of whether a world order really serves.
There you go. I think she says there quite clearly that it's not about decentralized cryptos, but centralized central bank digital currencies. Guess what? The Yidinji Nation has its IDs. It has its central bank digital currency. but we're not going to rest there. You know, we want to make sure that this piece of territory on this planet is looked after, and to the best of our ability, that peace, order and good government is the hallmark of the Yidinji Nation, and the world will learn about the Yidinji because of those strong principles. Kanyara?
Oh, absolutely. So, as she rightly mentioned there, she's talking about sovereign currencies. You know, not this crypto or Bitcoin or Ethereum, Ripple coin. They aren't made under an act. They're just like a bag of potatoes or just a little bit of gold, for example. But they're not made under an act. And this is the important thing. The Yidinji dollar, the SYD, is actually made under an act of the government, which is created pursuant to the sovereignty that coexists with that of the crown. How simple is this? You know, our dollar, our Yidinji dollar, is created pursuant to an act. It is a central bank digital currency, the SYD. It is a sovereign currency that's created under the sovereignty that coexists with the sovereignty of the Australian crown. There is no other way for it to be. But if you want to use Bitcoin, you're going to pay, you know, it's just like anything. It's just like a bag of potatoes. You're going to just swap something for a Bitcoin. It's not money. Bitcoin and Ethereum are not money.
Yes, this is obviously the legal tender is very different to commodities. One of the things that I know that Yurlim, and without mentioning names, Minister, but I know that you've been liaising and educating foreign entities about the central bank, the Yidinji one. What's some of the interest that's popped up with some of the people that have worked for the International Monetary Fund, etc.?
Yeah, well, sort of trying to come to terms with how far ahead this is. You know, our CBDC and its capacity to look after its citizens and deal with its currencies is something that they haven't come across before, and it's taken quite a while for them to come to terms with it, and we're finally at that point now where they recognise that it is a internationally recognised CBDC. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a journey, but well worth it.
I think it's something to be very excited about. Now, the Bahamas and Nigeria have functioning CBDCs. The third one on the planet to do that was Yidinji. We beat China, we beat the US, we beat Australia. All right? But like I said, we're not stopping there. Now we're going to take that further into using that CBDC, that Binal Yidinji, to look after Yidinji, after the elders, after the school children, and after the local businesses here on the Yidinji territory. And that's a very exciting thing, because that there, what they're calling sovereign currency, is where the buck stops and it starts. It starts with this wonderful place we call home here. And we want to use it to benefit this territory, and I think there's a very very sensible approach to doing things here. But anyway, we'll go to a break. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition. We'll be back after the break with the final comments. Welcome back. Some final comments. Bumi, what's your message to everyone around the world that might be listening to this?
Yeah, well, ring us up, you know. So you've probably got our number, Asmurumu, and I want you to keep the good fight up, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Ganyara?
Look, know who you are. This is probably the biggest thing. It's the illegal identification is the problem. Most people don't know that. They wouldn't have a clue about that. So once you learn who you are, and probably the best way to start is to think of yourself not as the identity. Just you're a human that can use something. And this is all we've got to start with. Once you get to there, you're right. Consider it like a teacup, you know. You can only drink out of one cup at one time. You can hold multiple cups if you want, but you can only use one at a time. And most people want to be seen through one, the Australian one, or the UN member state one. Good luck, you know. But you're going to go into a new world where their money is going to be very heavily regulated through the new blockchain technology. Good luck, you know. But you can always go back to where you rightfully belong under your Indigenous nations as they stipulate in UNDRIP.
Yeah, thanks, Kanyara. Yeah, you're right, you know, knowing your identity. And, yeah, that's what the example that the Yidinji government is setting because of its heritage, you know, the example of the virtues that are extolled. And of course, what we've been talking about today, justice sits very high on that one, and having the courage to follow through with wisdom and temperance. So these are the ones that sit at the core of what we've been following. So, yeah, thanks, man.
Yes, so thank you, gentlemen, for doing that. And I guess my final words will be something from the good book, you know, which I like to read. And it says, and if you got one, if you want a free one, come to the office. We'll hand them out to you. Deuteronomy 28 says, if you obey the Lord your God and carefully follow all his commands I give you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations on earth. So, Kayabara, thank you very much for lifting up Yidinji, because we are making grounds around the planet. And down the bottom here it says that he will, if you listen to his voice, you will lend but you will never borrow. So you're going to give that money, that binal. We're going to give you binal, Australia. You will lend to many nations but you'll borrow from none. So if you want binal, come and talk to the Yidinji government, China or Australia or Samoa, New Zealand, Moldova, whoever you are listening out there. We've got it here for you, and we're happy to share it, but you've got to spend it properly. It's programmable. You've got to look after the weak, the orphan, the defenceless, the fragile, the poor, you know, the homeless, all that stuff. That's the money that we want to spend. And anyway, may God's peace be upon you, wherever you are listening to this program, in the mighty name of Yeshua HaMashiach. We'll catch you.